Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to Bravo and the Brits, the podcast with a distinctly English take on all things reality TV. I'm with someone that I will never trust with a grill ever again, Faith Richardson.
It's truly for the greater good.
So talk me through what happened.
So I put some halloumi cheese on a bit of tinfoil on our grill pan and I put it in the grill. And basically our grill is like old as fuck. It came with the house. I tried to give it the best clean I could, but always like no matter what I cook under it, always just like smoke comes out of it. And I never used to close the door on the grill ever, but because this constantly sets off our smoke alarms, I was like, I'll just shut the door. It's only cheese. What can happen? And then after like 5 or 6 minutes, I was sat on the sofa with Greg and he's like, can you smell burning? And I was like, yeah, I can a bit. We went through and Greg was like, it's on fire. It's fully on fire.
Oh my God. So what do you do in that scenario? Do you put water on it? No, because it's electrical.
Like, yeah. Well, this is the thing. So we literally, Greg pulled the door open and flames just shot out.
No.
Up over the top. And I was there going, what do we do? What do we do? And Greg was like, I don't know. I don't know. And I was like, wet towels are always the answer. So I soaked a tea towel and threw it on and just nothing happened. And I was like, we need bigger towels. So I ran upstairs and grabbed two of our bath towels. Now, Greg and I have separate bath towels and Greg's are all old and holy and gross. And mine are really nice and fluffy. So I'm not going to lie, even in my moment of panic, I grabbed his holy one. And literally soaked them. And he threw one over the grill pan that was like fully on fire. Like he grabbed this with his bare hands and just pulled it out of the grill. I was insane. So yeah, we threw a towel over that, managed to get that on the top of it, but the inside of the grill was still on fire. So against better judgment, we just threw wet towels into it. I was like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, and when I was talking to my mum afterwards, she was like, electric oven, you know, wet towels. And I was like, I know, but at this point, I just wanted this fire to be out.
But wait, what are you actually meant to do in that scenario? Because now your experience with this has like stressed me out beyond belief, and like I feel like I need to be prepared.
Well, so I googled it, so like in this kind of like, right, what could, if that ever happens again, what's the best thing to do? And it was like the proper fire department sort of guidance is just leave it and just get everybody out the house. And I was like, well, if I'd have left it, like our kitchen cabinets are wood, we would have lost the full kitchen. But apparently the other thing is like you meant to dump sand on it, and it's like, who has sand just lying around?
I guess I'll just go and get my sandbags, which I've been using to create my moat.
So I mean, truly, I think if you can get the grill pan out and it's just the grill pan that's on fire, a wet towel is the way forward.
I love that their advice is just like, well, you better just save yourselves, like your house is down the drain.
You
just
might as well up.
Just quit while you're ahead. Yeah, you know?
And of course I was trying to like hustle the dogs into the living room and I was like, should we put them in the garden? And Greg was like, we can't, because our back door's like through our kitchen. Greg was like, we can't bring them past the fire. And I was like, what do we do?
Oh God, like, honestly, so that just sounds,
like, it was so stressful. The smoke alarms are going off. Our neighbor, like we had the front door and back door open trying to like fan the smoke out. And our neighbour stuck his head through the front door and was like, is everything all right in here? And I was like, just a minor fire, it's fine. And he was like, you got it under control. And I was like, I think so, yeah. And he was like, well, that's fine. Just shout if you need anything. And then just kind of like shuffled away. And I was like, he's like 60 odd years old. It's just like, oh my God. But like our fire alarms aren't like, they're kind of like all wired in. So you can't just turn them off. So they were just going,
oh God.
On, and we'd cleared all the smoke downstairs and Greg was like, why are they still going off? And I was like, I better know why. And I went upstairs and our full top floor was just thick of smoke and I was like, oh, for fuck's sake. So we had like a towel and a tray just trying to fan the flame, the smoke out of the house, and everything still smells like burning.
I'm literally getting chest pain just even hearing this story.
Well, I literally, as soon as we, like, it was, everything was under control and the alarms had stopped and everything, I went outside and I was like, I'm just going to ring my dad in the garden. And I literally answered the phone and was just like, and my dad was like, what's happened? I was like, I set the grill on fire.
No, it was just, it was when you sent me that picture on WhatsApp, which was just like a charred nub. And you were like, Lou, this is all that is left of our home.
And the worst part is so luckily we, like, my dad came around and helped me clean everything and make sure everything worked fine. So luckily everything apart from the knobs is still working. But the one knob that melted the way that it did is the one for the oven rather than the grill. So now we have to try and use that to get it to turn on until we can buy a new one.
You're just twiddling with like the mummy's nipple to get your oven to the right heat.
I'm going to keep that charred, melted, twisted knob for her. Just to
sort of... I think you should go full goth and like just do it, like drill a little hole in it and wear it around your neck just as a reminder of what you've been through.
Either that or just box frame it in the kitchen somewhere.
Yeah, go live, laugh, love with it.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I too was traumatized this past week. I kind of vaguely follow Lana Del Rey. Like, I love her music, but I'm not much of like a fan with a capital F of anyone, as in, you know, I'm like obsessed with Lana's music, but I don't really go for like the online like communities of fandoms or whatever. It's just not really something that I ever do. But because I kind of follow the odd hashtag or whatever, I do end up, you know, kind of seeing a few things by osmosis. And this conversation caught my eye on Twitter, and someone said something like, oh, people continue to stan Lana like she's still like the sugar daddy chasing whatever, like Lolita girl that she was in 2013, when in reality she's like a middle-aged woman with a cop husband or whatever, a cop boyfriend. And I was like, yeah, true, but also like that was always just a persona.
Yeah, exactly.
To me, I was kind of like, okay, are people really taking it that seriously? Like, I just thought it was a bit strange. So I started reading, and then someone was like, these stans be acting like Lana doesn't have a Karen fireplace. And I would just like you, Faith, to Google now in this moment. Please Google Lana Del Rey's fireplace.
Oh, God.
It was just, it was not what I saw for her.
I'm so excited for this, though. Like, we, you know, we live for ripping on truly terrible interiors.
Oh, here we go. I've literally found the exact thread that I, like, fell into last night. So it's, the first post is the initial one that I saw. And then the one immediately underneath it is the response.
Oh no, oh God, it's so terrible. It looks like it's like a middle-aged like Trump rally supporter.
I know.
Oh God,
it's so Orange County,
isn't it? Like the boats and the signs. Oh my God,
the only redeemable elements are the kind of stalks on either side, and I feel like if those were isolated,
yeah,
with the malachite green against maybe like a gold and a teal, that could work. But other than that, it's all pretty horrific.
I mean, that's truly monstrous. I really expected better from her.
And I mean, I love like an original fireplace, but yeah, this is just not the way to treat your mantle. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not. All the signs and the love and the happiness and the, oh no, I think it's giving me hives just thinking about it.
My response to this, which I've just seen 16 hours ago underneath the post, shocked and appalled, have decided not to take this on. So that's my trauma for the week.
Oh my goodness. I feel your pain. There is nothing worse than finding something that you quite enjoyed and just finding out things like that about them.
Finding out that they're just deeply basic.
Yeah.
One of the greatest musical talents of our generation, and she's got like a fucking cursive like inspirational quote sign up on a fake chalkboard. It's
acceptable. It's just so unacceptable.
And she has the money now to have an interior designer, you know. Yeah. I don't even need you personally to have the taste, but at least hire someone to have the taste for you.
Oh, I'm truly sorry for your loss this week.
That's all right. I'll get over it, I guess. Ah, so anyway, this is the episode where Ramona is pushed to her breaking point.
And I mean, I really thought it would take just a little bit more.
It was interesting because the way they set this up, you get all this kind of foreshadowing with Leah as we flash back to like that dinner with her mother where she's voicing her concerns about the drinking. And then we also get the tea party where Leah and Ramona have this kind of reconciliation. So they're kind of pushing this Ramona-Leah dynamic from the beginning.
yeah, this kind of like sense that Ramona's trying to be her mother or trying to sort of overly compensate for Leah's lack of relationship with her mother or something. But there's definitely a foreshadowing that she's trying to insert herself into their dynamic and insert herself into Leah's life in a very like authoritative way that I just don't think needs to be there.
Yeah, and like kind of rein her in, kind of doing a Karen to a Casey or to an Ashley.
Very, very much so. And I just think it's frustrating because it's like Leah is a grown woman. Like she's got this far through her life doing her thing, and it's not really up to Ramona to tell her that it's wrong.
Yeah, and yeah. And then I think it's interesting because they also start out with them at Scarpetta, which looks very bland to begin with, by the way. Those black chairs were very kind of co-working space boardroom to me.
Yeah, I kind of very much got like a conference room vibe from it.
I mean, I guess the point is that you hire it and then you put your own spin on it. But the way that Ramona was like, it's my favorite place, I was just quite surprised. I thought it would be a bit more jazzy from the outset. But anyway, it kind of surprised me that Leah was with her doing the sort of preamble to the party.
Yeah, I did as well. Like, I know obviously she clearly had such a traumatic time with Dorinda and Sonia accompanying her. But I would have thought she was probably more of the type to go alone or to take one of these other supposed fantastic girlfriends that she had with her.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know production can't sort of predict the future, but I wonder if production was like, let's get Leah on board because she's probably going to get drunk at the party and there's probably going to be some kind of friction between them. Because like I say, they're kind of pushing that narrative from the beginning.
Yeah, and I love that it's like the famous last words of like, hopefully there won't be any drama. And then Ramona like allocated Leah the task of ensuring that nothing unfolded during the evening. That Leah clearly is psychic in that she said, oh, I can just imagine the kind of women that'll be in that room, like very heavy facelifts and looking like they're at a MAGA rally.
Yeah, I love that. Just a MAGA rally of frozen faced, Upper East Side blonde, three-quarter aged socialites.
Literally exactly what came into fruition as well.
Exactly. So we flash quickly to Dorinda and Len. Dorinda uses the same mascara as me, I'm pleased to say. Better Than Sex by Too Faced.
I love that Len got such a kick out of that name. She is so pure.
I really enjoy that she is managing to get so much kind of screen time. I hope she's being paid. I think she must be because she's got lines. So. Yeah.
I agree. I fully agree. And I hope she is getting some extra compensation. But I think she's just a worthy addition, frankly.
She should be a friend of.
Yes, 100%.
And then we flash to Sonia, who is looking for someone to rent her townhouse. She's down in the basement. There are just like rails of clothing in truly somewhere that just looks so damp. This stressed me out. And that like little discarded Society magazine sort of flash was just like, oh, how the mighty have fallen.
I know. I mean, this was truly possibly the dingiest room that I've ever seen. And I refuse to believe that a townhouse that's that elaborate has such a shithole for a basement, quite frankly. And secondly, that at no point did Sonia think, all my clothes are probably worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. Let me put them in this damp, flooding basement.
Literally sell them off. I mean, Vestiaire Collective do a concierge service where all you have to do is send them pictures on WhatsApp and they'll be like, yes, no, yes, no. They'll arrange a courier to come and pick up the stuff.
I mean,
and then they'll literally like value it and sell it for you.
That's truly the bare minimum that you ever have to do. Like, I'm over here selling like 40 things a week on eBay where I've got to hand parcel everything. Like, you can take a concierge service to take them away and make some money.
Yeah, Sonia literally has, like, unpaid interns literally coming out the wazoo.
Yeah.
Get one of them to just generate some income from her wardrobe rather than just letting it all. It just upsets me that there's probably some really beautiful designer garments that are just being like surrendered to the mildew.
Yeah, they're just festering in this like damp, dingy environment. Like, it was really bothersome to me as well. I almost wanted to just be like, look, I will literally fly to New York and take these off you.
So, oh my God, I got an email about 2 years ago from this woman in Newcastle who said, you know, I've got some designer stuff, you know, I'd like you to sell it for me. And I was kind of like, oh, right. Yeah, I get this all the time, you know, and people are like, is this any good? And it's like some absolute shite from the 80s. And it's like John Richards or, you know, some like nothing designer. And I was like, yeah, like what kind of brand names are we talking? She was like, yeah, a bit of everything. She was in Jesmond and I looked up her address and I was like, okay, I know that road. I was like, okay, this is worth my time. I went over there. I estimate that what was in her wardrobe was probably upwards of $250,000.
Holy shit.
This is in Newcastle as well. So this is not like a particularly... I mean, there are some pockets of wealth, but like it's not Manhattan. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Chanel furs, like so many furs. Jean-Paul Gaultier. She had like special one-off gifts that Chanel would send her from Paris because she was like such a frequent customer. That she had like a little like Karl Lagerfeld like figurine that he had sent and just insane stuff. And she wanted me to sell the stuff for her. But at the time, I didn't have an office or anything. And I was like, well, what I could do is come here, you know, spend the day here, list it all for you, right? And then I go, and then when something sells, I generate the label. Or because she had also a full-time personal assistant. So I was like, I can then email it to Stacey or whatever. Okay. All Stacey needs to do is print off the label and arrange a collection time. But apparently even that was too much hassle. And it's kind of like, well, I can't really make it any easier for you than that. So
she expects you to do like literally just give her the money yourself. Like,
yeah, I mean, this is the thing. Like, it wasn't stuff that I could buy off her to resell because it was that expensive, you know. But anyway,
I had a similar thing where it was like, because I like did that sort of like flipping things on eBay for quite a while to like make money while I was at uni, and somebody that Greg works with, like, they were like, oh yeah, my mum died recently and she's got like wardrobes full of like Burberry trenches and things like that, and I was like, yeah, like I'll totally, you know, flip them for you and like take a fee or whatever. And he was like, yeah, yeah, like I'll send you some photos. And I was like waiting a couple of weeks and I sent him a message like, oh, is that, are you like, how are you getting on with that? Like, if you managed taking photos, whatever. He's like, oh, I just gave it to somebody else to do. And I was just like, why would you do that? Like, why would you just do that to me?
So fucking, like, I honestly, I can't deal with, like, freelancers or whatever love to bitch about never having work. And then when you try and give them work, they're like, oh, I don't know. It's going to be difficult, or like, never get back to you. The girl that did all the branding for my website just literally just stopped responding to me one day, and I was like, I'm literally trying to give you paid work.
Oh my god. We've had a similar thing with like the magazine and stuff as well, where it's like, I like commissioned 4 articles from somebody, she's literally just never replied to me since.
So this is why I find it, I get really annoyed when people are like complaining about stuff, because it's like, well, respond then.
Yeah.
You know. Anywho's. Then we cut to Luann in the shower, and I literally thought she was showering the dirt off her own legs.
I did as well.
Like, until they cut to the dog, and I was like, all right, okay, that makes more sense.
It was because she had those little, like, capri leggings on, and she was like, oh, just get the dirt of the city off your legs. And I was like, what a weird way to talk about yourself.
So at this point, we learn that Ramona's decided to get everyone to wear black so she can stand out. Which is utterly psychotic and the birthday equivalent of a bridezilla.
Oh, 1,000%. I mean, this is such a Ramona thing to do. Like, make sure everybody else looks the same so that I can be the shining star.
But we do agree that this birthday is her surrogate wedding, isn't it? Oh,
1,000%. You know that she's gone above and beyond to try and make this so spectacular because she's like, well, I'm never going to have a wedding again. I mean, she even says that later on. She was like, maybe I'll have you back for a wedding to the party planner. And it's like, oh, Ramona.
Yeah, babe, get a boyfriend first. But then also, like, fucking relax your standards because you're mental. So Leah's accompanying her. It appears that Dorinda and Sonia have been sort of usurped. Yeah, Leah thinks that Ramona's birthday is going to look like a MAGA rally, which was great. And then we transition into Luann doing some philanthropic work, community outreach. I mean, I have to say that Luann doing her charity work in those first few seasons did provide us with some of the most iconic, difficult to watch television.
The one where she was teaching young girls how to model, and she was like, well, it's fine, you can always lose weight, you can't get height. And it was like, this poor girl was clearly thought that she, as she was quite, you know, capable of being a model, and Luann was like, well, no, you have to be thin, which, as we know now, bullshit. But to do that to a girl who I think was about 12 years old.
Yeah, just prime age for disordered eating.
Yeah, it's just so delusional. And she said it with such a, like, duh, kind of vibe that it was just painful, really painful.
I mean, Luann's in Casa. I do think it's good that the show is putting this organization out there through its platform and stuff.
I
do wonder if Luann realizes how much her incarceration experience is white privilege.
Yeah, I thought this too, and especially because a lot of the people that were at the center and stuff were obviously like Black people and things like that, and you could tell that. I mean, at least she was self-aware enough when she was talking about it to say that her story doesn't compare to other people's stories, but I think she doesn't grasp the concept of how privileged that she obviously was to have like a single night in a police cell because she fully assaulted a police officer.
Yeah, I wonder if she did maybe acknowledge that in her story and they cut it. I hope she did, yeah, because she acknowledged it in her testimonials. I think she obviously got quite like a positive response, so I have to imagine that she was quite kind of humble.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, it was really moving listening to all the other people's stories. And like, I did actually feel for her when she was telling her story. Like, again, it wasn't even on the same plane as some of the other people's. But
you know, the man in the beanie hat?
Yeah.
Do you know who he reminded me of? I'll bleep that out, but he so had that energy.
I want that energy, oh my god.
Don't you think? I don't know if it was just the hat.
Oh my god, no, I think it was just the overall kind of like slightly like curly head sloppy vibe. Like,
but you know what's really funny as well? So there was him, and then there was this other guy, and they were both basically like Polish packaging heirs that were like pursuing me in the space of one calendar year, which just feels weirdly specific.
Oh my god, that's so specific.
I wonder if they know each other, because like the Polish owned packaging factory scene can't be that big, can it?
Quite a niche thing. Like,
and they also were so like Rick Owens. They're both obsessed with Japan as well, which is a weird thing, and like Japanese fashion.
Yeah,
and they like dress the same.
They have to know each other. They just have to.
I should ask at some point.
Sure, you 100% sure? That's hilarious.
Because one of them, obviously not. I went to uni with him. He did 1 year of fashion photography and then dropped out, and I never saw him again. And then I was swiping on Tinder on the train going down to London, and somewhere around like Lincolnshire I picked him up.
No way.
I was like, holy shit, that's Jonathan from uni. And then we got talking again from there, but then we never crossed over, so we never met up. It was just one of those like really weird moments.
That is so wild. How bizarre that you picked it up like on a train.
Literally just scanning the country.
I love that.
Anyway, this guy seems pretty cool. I'm happy that he's found his peace.
I know. I mean, it was really nice to hear. I did feel for them, but yeah, when Luann stood up and sort of told her story, like, it felt quite an emotional thing for her, obviously. But when you kind of put it in the context of all these other people, it felt a bit flat.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, obviously, the repercussion she's had to deal with has been so much less. It's not like her career's been affected. In fact, it's probably given it a boost. You know, there's no such thing as bad publicity. But when she said she got charged with 3 felonies, I was like, holy shit. Like, I don't think I've ever heard that said out loud. And I was like, 3 felonies, like, that's intense.
It's really serious. And it's not like a misdemeanor or anything. Like, a felony is like a really, really serious kind of crime. So yeah, I was quite surprised when she said that.
I bet she posted her own bail, though.
Oh, 100%.
Bale is insane, by the way. Like, American Bale is insane, that there are like businesses that will loan you money for Bale.
That's crazy. What the hell?
Yeah, there was like a podcast advert the other day for like bail bonds in North Carolina. Like,
what?
If you get arrested protesting, like, call these guys.
That's insane. Oh, of course. Yeah, they do have bail bonds, don't they? And then it's like, I'm assuming you pay them back? Is that how it works? Or do they just...
Yeah, it's a loan. So, yeah.
Yeah, you just have to like, I suppose it's one of those good things where it does get you like out of prison. But yeah, it was that thing where it was like, it was kind of very aware when we talk, like listening to these people tell their stories and stuff, that Luan presumably paid her own bail and then swanned out of jail after a night to like her multi-million pound apartment. And these guys are like, I was just, you know, adamant I was never going to like live in a bathroom again.
Basically, I feel that in America, literally everything is for profit.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Unless it's like a gala dinner. Otherwise, just assume that everything else is a money-making industry, no matter what it is.
100%. It just has to be. It's just the American way.
God bless. So Luan is helping by offering spa days, which initially I was like, oh, come on. And then I was like, well, actually, no, fair enough. Like, why does everything just have to be about the bare necessities? Why can't you do something philanthropic that's genuinely going to be a treat?
Yeah, so this was the exact sort of journey that I went on with it as well. I initially rolled my eyes. I was literally just like, oh, come on. Like, out of everything you could offer, that's what you're giving. But then it was that thing of like, yeah, these women, like, yeah, they need, you know, the essentials, they need the necessities. But why can't they have something that's literally just a sheer little bit of like self-care and a little bit of luxury and a little bit of a treat just for them? Just because, like, not everything has to be for something. Do you know what I mean?
I got
on board with it at the end.
Ramona and Avery are going to dinner with Mario, who now lives in Florida full-time. Hope he's okay, given that Florida is like the seventh circle of hell right now.
I'm sure, like, assuming that Mario is probably absolutely fine though.
Did you have an Italian restaurant that you always used to go to?
Yes.
Every family does.
Don't they? It's so weird. We had two that were literally around the corner from each other, and it depended on what level of sort of fanciness it was going to be, like what kind of meal it was going to be. One was for like special occasions, and one was like our regular haunt, shall we say. But yeah.
So what was the vibe of that? Talk to me about that.
I mean, they were still, let's face it, they were still very, like, suburban Newcastle Italian restaurants. We're not talking anything fancy here. But it was that thing, like, all through school and stuff, it was like, oh, you know, we're celebrating something. Let's go to here, or let's go to this one, because it's a really big deal. Like,
we had, so there's this little university town called Leuven. And it's kind of like 20 minutes outside of Brussels. Uh-huh. And it was called, our restaurant was called Ciao Italia.
Incredible.
Of course it was. And we were literally going there from like day one. It was like the place. And like one time when I was really little, like I was so small that I fell between the end of the booth and the window. My parents just like continued with their meal for like a good 10 to 15 minutes before my hand just like. And they also got me started on the amaretto very young at that place. Like, I literally remember being like 4 or 5 years old, and they'd be like, aperitivo, and they'd bring me like a little like a glass of amaretto.
No, that was literally the kind of thing that would, like, it was through my parents, not the restaurant, but they would sort of order something like that, and then they'd be like, oh, you can have a little bit of like the limoncello and something like that. And I was like, okay, this is great. I was like seven.
It's the European way.
Absolutely. Start them early, and it hopefully curbs any alcohol problems they have in later life.
I was just reflecting on my lockdown journey the other day, because I found this this video of me like drinking wine from the bottle and swiping on Tinder and like commentating at my friend. And then I think, like, now I have a six pack. Yes. And that really says it all for like how far we've come in these few months.
The growth has been real.
I mean, as soon as life gets back to normal, there's no fucking way I'm exercising every day. I'm just doing it because I have literally nothing else to do. And it's free.
I mean, I feel like you've truly thrived in this, whereas all I've achieved is I've gone up a jean size and set something on fire.
Didn't you get like an insane work promotion?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that little
that old thing.
Well, being such a woman, celebrate yourself, for God's sake.
You're right, you're so right.
Be more man, be more white man.
Be more Ramona.
Be more Ramona, yeah, exactly. I love me.
Why would I want to celebrate anything but me?
Mario is kind of low-key friend zoning Ramona over this dinner.
I know, it was so uncomfortable to watch.
But it was cute when Avery was like, yeah, we're the Three Musketeers, like.
No, I mean, it is nice, like I said, like, it is nice that they continue to do this and continue to have, like, family time. And, like, I did appreciate what Ramona was saying about, like, they both just had to sort of get over it. I don't know why Mario had the audacity to be angry at Ramona post-breakup. That felt...
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it would be... Well, it was because supposedly he had the affair because he felt slighted because she was all about the show.
Well, I mean, that's just an ego thing, really.
Well, that's it. I know, it's the dumbest excuse, but that's what he says. He's like, oh, she was so busy doing the show that...
Insane. But yeah, I mean, I still cringed hard when she was like, and I love you. And he was like, oh, that's nice.
I know. As I said last time, tell your fucking ex-wife you still love her for the love of God.
For the sake.
The mother of your children, child, just...
just suck it up.
So we are back at the Russian spa.
I'm just so happy to have both the return of the Russian spa and Leah's sister in one scene.
I really like Leah's sister.
I do. I'd love for her to also be on the show. Would it be the first time that there's ever been, like, sisters or siblings on Real Housewives franchise?
I think we saw Tinsley's sister at some point, didn't we? Daphne?
Yes.
Daphne, which is just such an awful name.
Daphne and Tinsley. I mean, what were the parents thinking?
Oh, terrible. My mum hasn't heard from her Russian friend since the dossier came out about, like, the Brexit interference.
Really?
She was like, well, it's a bit strange. And I was, like, talking to her and she goes, well, you know, she does sometimes just go AWOL for weeks on end. And it's like, interesting. This woman is, like, a high-up professor. She's like a historian of ideas.
I don't even know what that means.
I know, which is A, badass, B, obscure as fuck, C, definitely means spy.
1000%. There, like, she has clearly got some kind of double agent life going on here.
And so I was thinking about this, and I can completely see Leah marrying literally into the Russian mob.
Yeah, I could so see that for her as well. Like, I feel like she needs some kind of, like, she needs somebody who's, like, that level of gangster. Do you know what I mean?
I think Leah's a very strong woman, but I think part of her would quite enjoy being with, like, a man's man.
Yeah, like, she
like
needs...
Like, a big bear, you know?
1000%. She needs, like, a big alpha kind of vibe.
She does, because she is also alpha.
Yeah.
But I think deep down... wants to be held, because there's still that disconnect with her mother that she's going to need to make up for in some sense.
Yeah, I think it's very much like a sort of a missing link in, like, her dynamic just in life. So I would love to see her with somebody who's, like, a proper macho, like, takes control of everything but is still happy for her to be just as much of, like, a boss ass bitch.
What did you think about Tinsley and Scott's Cinderella Disneyland photo?
Oh my god, I was hoping. I hate it. I have a friend who, not so much anymore, but literally up until very, you know, the last year or so, was like this level of obsessed with Disney, where she would go to Disney like 2 or 3 times a year, like dressed princess and walk around.
No,
I could never ever get on board with it. I hate it so much. I hate Disney. I hate, like, oh, I can't do it.
There's something so strange and wrong about girls that, like, are so into Disney as adults. Like, there's just something about it that really doesn't sit right with me. And that guy that I was seeing earlier this year, his ex-girlfriend was like a Disney blogger.
No.
And I was like, okay. And I, you know, when you're like trying to gauge like how mean you can be.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, oh, okay, that's
niche.
Okay. But in my head, I was like, that's the worst fucking thing I've ever heard. Like,
I mean, I just don't understand it. Like pretty much, I say it all, but like, there's a big chunk of my like female friends who are like obsessed with watching Disney films. And like, I don't mind it occasionally. There's a handful where I can sort of, you know, if it's an easy Sunday and I want something slightly nostalgic, I can watch a Disney film. But I don't love them. I'm not obsessed with them. I can't name you 90% of the people in any of them. Like, I just don't get it. And like, I haven't watched a new Disney film since like The Lion King came out in 93. And everyone finds that so weird. Like, oh my God, you've never seen Frozen. You've never seen Brave. And I'm like, I'm a grown-ass woman. Why would I watch them?
Well, you see, I love animated films, but I'm like an Aardman girl. I like Curse of the Were-Rabbit. I will watch the shit out of any day. Like, never Chicken Run. You've never seen Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
I just can't get away with like those kind of animated films.
No, Faith, no. No.
You, I'm not expecting you.
It's highly, highly intellectual. Have you ever seen the Lego Movie?
No.
Okay, the Lego Movie is all about totalitarianism.
Yes.
Okay, and like AI dystopia and big data. Okay, and the Lego Movie 2 is all about consciousness and creative practice. Okay, so don't give me any shit about these films.
Genuinely, I did not expect this from you at all.
I love an anime. Okay, so I have two like film viewing modes. I either want to watch like an all-out war flick, or it's got to have talking like computer-generated animals. There's not much I can do in between that.
See, I exist solely in between that. Like, I exist in really bad like teen chick flicky comedies, awful horror films, good horror films, and the occasional thriller. That's where I sit comfortably.
I was always just such a film snob. I remember like when I was younger, my friends always wanted to watch like Scream 2, and I'd just be like, oh, this is so childish. What? Oh my God, what was it called? Scary Movie.
Yeah. Oh no.
Oh God. And I was just like, this is so dumb. And then I hadn't seen like any of the other films, so like I didn't get any of the references. And do you know what I will watch? Jackass.
Yes. Oh my God, right.
I fucking love Jackass. Johnny Knoxville is so sexy. I also really fancy Steve-O.
So do I. Right, thank you, because I've always been alone in this, but I literally used to fancy Steve-O and Johnny Knoxville unlimitedly.
I mean, Johnny Knoxville everyone fancies, so like whatever. Yeah, he's hot, who cares. Steve-O though, I feel like I would marry
1000%.
I would emotionally commit to Steve-O.
Yes. Do you follow him on Instagram?
I do not.
Truly follow him on Instagram. It's the greatest thing you'll ever do.
Okay. Does he have a girlfriend?
He does. But you always post like naked pictures of him in the bath. Which is pretty cool.
Oh God, I fucking love Jackass. I really want to watch that now.
Same. I think Jackass
2. I might watch that this weekend.
I think I might. I think I've got it on like, it might be on Now TV, and I think I've got the DVD floating around somewhere. I might go full old school.
Brilliant. I love that. We should do like a marathon at some point.
So obsessed with that idea.
So anyway, Leah and her sister are at Spa 88 and they're having a deep conversation against like the thrashing about of hairy men in the swimming pool. The audio was so bad.
It was so, so poor. And I mean, it was not the greatest setting. I think when they took the women there, like they made it look like it could be sort of, it was like super rustic, but could also be really luxurious. And then when you saw it in this, when it was like the real people in it was like, oh no.
I really enjoy how much publicity Spa 88 is getting out of this.
Me too. I truly think they deserve it.
So Leah's sister also seems to have a very rough relationship with her mother, and she sort of lets slip that the mum said she doesn't like her kids, which is rough. And you can kind of see as soon as this comes out that it sort of sends Leah into a bit of a spiral, even though she's sort of maintaining face. I just think that as a parent, there are some things that you may well think, but I just feel like you keep it to yourself, you know?
Like, fair enough, say it to your husband or your partner or whatever. But I don't feel like you should say to either of your children, like, oh, I don't like Leah. I don't like Sarah. Is there another child, Sarah?
Oh, I don't know.
But, like, you shouldn't be saying to either of them that you don't like the other one. And you definitely shouldn't say to one of them that I don't like either of you. I just found that, like, it just sounds like they're... Because beforehand, I could sort of empathize with their mom, and I just thought it was her and a Leah-specific problem. But now after this, I'm kind of like, it just sounds like their mom has a lot of issues. And I mean, I think Leah's sister even said, like, she, you know, she's fucked up and things like this, and she's just projecting. So it sounds like there's actually a lot of deep-rooted issues that probably explain a lot of why Leah's childhood was so rough and up and down.
Yeah, there must be something that we don't know, because like you say, when she appeared on the show before, I actually thought she seemed very sane and fair and measured.
Yeah, same. And now I just feel duped.
We then go to the townhouse again. Now, Sonia's intern's outfit. Lots going on.
A lot happening.
Didn't really know what to say, what to think.
I know. I mean, just this whole scene was like, you could just tell that Sonia's getting that like manic energy back again.
And it just... Yeah, I mean, you can tell just by the people she's surrounding herself with that, like, things are not heading in the right direction.
Yeah, like her hysteria about the toilet that won't stop flushing. And like...
To be fair, though, imagine the stress of having your expenses be around the 50k a month mark.
Yeah, when she said that, I literally, like, my jaw dropped. But, I mean, it's that thing. She always seems to get, like, whenever she starts to do anything with the townhouse, I feel like she starts to get... this kind of like manic, slightly sad, chaotic energy about her. And I don't know if it's just because it's so the townhouse is like such a physical representation of like the life she used to have.
But this is where I'm like, just sell the damn thing.
Yeah.
Make your peace with it and then go and like buy yourself a nice flat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she's already said that she's renting that one on like Columbus Circle or whatever, which can't be cheap, but it looks like the ideal apartment for her. You know, she's like on the Upper West Side, like it's the right size for her, she doesn't have to do any maintenance, like all of this stuff. It's like, just sell the fucking townhouse.
But she won't, because it's her past life. It's a vestige of what she once had.
Exactly. And I think it's that thing, like, I know we saw in like past seasons where she was trying to sell it and nobody would buy it because it's so old-fashioned and
outdated,
falling apart. And it's like, just inject like that 50 grand into it, do like a really surface level modernization, sell all your antiques and your furniture and your clothes
and
kept in the fucking wet basement, sell it all, use that money to just repair it, do a really surface level like paint job, carpets, that's it, and just fucking sell it.
I mean, that's what I would do.
Yeah, I think she's doing that thing, though, where she's pricing it because of its emotional value for her rather than what it's actually worth.
Yeah, what she wants to see for it as opposed to what she can get.
Which is always just a dangerous thing to do.
And then we learn that she got kicked out of a bar in Philadelphia after doing a lecture at a university about leadership.
Yeah, I found this really weird. And that whole speech, like the forces of it was chaotic, like... We found out she dated Billy Idol, and then she was talking about that how much everybody loved the toaster oven that never materialized. And I was really struggling to keep up at this point.
I do you know what I'm sad about?
What?
I'm sad that I'm going to be doing online teaching for the foreseeable future. I honestly miss like leaning against my lectern. I never got to say goodbye.
Oh, that's so nice.
I didn't really have like a proper one at Northumbria, to be fair. I had a really nice one at Newcastle.
Yeah. Oh, that's such a shame though.
Lovely wooden one. Very chic with the crest on the front.
Oh, that's what you want. That's the real
thing. But yeah, so this was, I kind of wish that we had seen more of this event.
Yeah, I wish this had been an actual part of an episode.
I wonder if they probably filmed it. You know, you can probably find it on YouTube and listen to it in its entirety.
Yeah, I would imagine it's somewhere in like the ether of the internet.
Yeah. And then Dorinda saying that there's like a vague sadness about Sonia was really ironic.
I know. I mean, throughout the rest of this episode where she's like, you can just tell, you know, she's lashing out against something and she's just not addressing what it was. And I was literally like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, but no one ever calls her out on the fact that she's doing it.
I know.
You know, just externalizing everything.
I know. I just thought the irony was so lost on her. And I was just like, how can you not, how can you see this in somebody else? And like, I actually agree with her. I think she is on the money with Sonia. But how can you see this in somebody else and not see it in yourself?
Yeah, exactly. And then we learn that Elise took Ramona out for lunch yesterday on her actual birthday, which seems to betray how they were kind of over the past few episodes, where Ramona seemed to be very much trying to pull away.
Yeah, I thought this as well. I thought this was a really weird, like, 180. And like, I even wrote down, like, oh, I guess they're just fine now. Like, I feel like sometimes the editing does this where there's a big leap between how things are left and how things are now. And I mean, I know at the Berkshires they sort of made up, but it didn't really feel like a proper makeup. And yet throughout the rest of this episode, like, Elise has fully drank the Kool-Aid and is just back to defending Ramona blindly.
Yeah, it was strange. It seemed like a bit of a U-turn.
Yeah, and I mean, especially considering all the videos that have been circling the internet this week.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, we'll go into that. Dorinda does seem to have quite an interesting selection of sort of burlesque adjacent items, doesn't she?
There's two, like, and she can just produce them at a moment's notice, which that bra was not something I expected Dorinda to even own. I also just
thought, like, the harness.
Yeah.
Or the fake tits.
Oh, I mean both, to be fair. I was literally talking about the harness, but I mean, the giant fake breastplate was a really weird curve.
I just love that word, breastplate.
I know.
I quite fancy getting one of those, but like a normal size, and then just seeing what it felt like to have boobs for a day.
I've always thought this as well, because like, I'm relatively flat chested, so I can't imagine having like proper like Orange County huge face
knockers.
Yeah. Oh god, what a word, what an awful word.
It's such a like gross like uncle word, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's like a proper sleazy old man in a pub kind of a word.
Hold the
or rack. The word rack.
Pint a lager, hold the Corona.
They're the exact kind of men that wear like straight cut blue jeans with brown dress shoes and a blazer over like a polo shirt.
I just felt an icy cold finger run its way down my back.
God, they're just the truly like a blight on the earth.
So we go to Ramona's party at Scarpetto. I thought she looked great in her pink dress, I'm not gonna lie. She
looked incredible. I mean, I don't know what she's really done to her face, but she looks phenomenal.
Yeah, I don't care. No. Yeah, she looks really good. And it didn't actually look sort of too tacky either, which I feel like sometimes hot pink with blonde can verge a bit on that.
Yeah. Unless,
but no, I thought she wore it well.
Yeah, I did as well. I think she managed to pull it off in like a classy way rather than like a Barbie kind of a way.
You know whose outfit I really didn't like?
Sonia's.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, the fur coat in and of itself, I think, was awful just as a standalone piece. And then that sequin dress, it screams like AliExpress to me.
Yeah, that's exactly the vibe I got from it as well. Or like an old Jane Norman kind of a vibe.
Oh, God, yes.
And she keeps insisting on wearing these dresses because they're like Sonia by Sonia Morgan, but they're just so repulsive. Like, it's not really doing herself any favours. It's not the kind of advertising that I would be wanting.
No, and I just don't think it flattered her, and I don't think she's got a bad figure at all, but I honestly don't think it flattered her. I think it needs sleeves.
Yeah, I agree. And she seems to keep clinging to this like sleeveless bodycon short dress look. And it's like, that's a hard look to pull off, like, by itself
at any age.
Yeah, and like you say, like, she's got a phenomenal figure, But there's just so many different ways that she could be dressing it that like makes her look like incredible.
I enjoyed the friend counter in the Chiron.
Oh, I loved that so much. Every time it pinged, I got like a little heartbeat of joy.
A little rush of adrenaline.
I feel like in this final scene, the producers really went above and beyond with the little captions underneath.
Missy is never not a presence, is she?
Oh no, she will be there probably until the rest of them die. Maybe she's just hoping if she lingers enough, she'll get made a friend of or like become a housewife.
I did think that black felt a bit funerary for a party, I have to say.
I did as well. And I mean, you know, I love a chic or black outfit every so often, but for a party where you're meant to be like celebrating and coming out, in air quotes, it felt like it could have been a whole lot more fun, a lot more exciting. Like even if she'd gone with like everybody wears white and I wear red, or everybody wears blue and I wear red, or whatever, there's so many things she could have done. But it did feel very much like they were mourning something. Like it was the chicest funeral there's ever been.
Ramona initially completely blanks Leah on camera, which is very awkward.
So awkward to watch.
And eventually when Leah does circle back, she makes like a little sly dig about her dress. Like she can't help herself. She just has to say something about the fact that it's kind of like a sheer dress.
I know. And it's like, it's not actually a sheer dress. It's like a sheer overlayer over a full slip dress. Like, it's not like she was literally just completely naked with a sheer mesh thing and that was it.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter to Ramona because she still obviously feels like she's somehow being upstaged.
I know. And I think she's just, it's just pure blind jealousy at this point.
Yeah. And I think it's super transparent to everyone involved as well, which is, you know, even more upsetting to watch. Dorinda is obviously thrilled about Sonia being chucked out of this bar because again it's just pure deflection.
Yeah, and it's just proof that everybody else can't handle their alcohol either, so she must be fine.
Yeah, and she's like, well, I just think Sonia's having a lot of difficulty. I can't do it. Dealing with her past. No, I can't do it. I was trying to go for like a slight slur and it just came out Muppety. And I just, you just want to be like, girls, listen, you're all still so deeply entrenched in your past.
Yeah, I think that's the big takeaway for pretty much all of them, is not one of them can just let it go.
Yeah, I mean, the only person who's not, arguably, is Leah. And that's only because she's too young to, like, have this sort of myth for herself. And anyway, she is still kind of stuck because romantically she's in this rut with Rob where she can't fully dissociate from him. So she's still got her own entanglement. So this is like a universal issue.
I was going to say, and I mean, I feel like what they all really need is just a really fucking good therapist. None of this life coach bullshit. Like, they need a real therapist.
Yeah. I mean, there is a show that I would watch.
Oh, God, can you imagine, like, Real Housewives on the couch?
Just really digging deep.
Yes, I'd be so into that.
That would be really good. Strip them of all the, like, party atmosphere and just, like, get into their backstory.
Yeah, get into, like, the raw, nitty-gritty kind of details. Love that.
So Dorinda floats Mexico as a concept to the girls, which I'm looking forward to, but the preview didn't get me that hyped up.
No, I wasn't that buzzing about it, although clearly Ramona didn't quit the show, so.
No. Who'd have thought that was an empty threat from Ramona, dearest. And then I feel like the editors were purposefully just panning over like all the blonde women who look exactly alike. It was very Valley of the Dolls. I did really appreciate that as a sort of cinematic device.
It was. It was fantastic. And I mean, it did feel very, like you say, like very sort of Stepford Wivesy, where everybody was just a clone of the woman next to them.
Yeah, no, it was really good. I like that Ramona is framing this day as the day she learned to love herself. Like that hasn't been her bit on the show for literal years.
I know. I mean, you're fooling nobody at this point. Everybody's either seen the show or knows you in person. So you can't float that this is a new theory that you've came up with.
That this is you suddenly embracing yourself for all of your flaws.
Oh, God. And I mean, that whole speech was cringe, but it was also just incredibly cringe that Sonia and Dorinda kept jumping on it.
They cannot let someone else just talk, can they? In any kind of speech format, they feel the need to intervene.
I know, and it happens every time there's a speech being made. Like the one where it was at that like benefit thing.
Oh, I can't even talk about that because it's that upsetting to me.
It's
when it was like, for the children, for the children.
Yes.
Oh God, but I do. I mean, like I say, I know Ramona was literally just spouting a load of bullshit. But, like, it is her birthday. Just let the fucking woman talk. You can roll your eyes in the background. You don't need to chime in.
I also like that when they were all on the sofa and that woman came over to them and her chiron, her, like, job title was Sonia insists more her friend than Ramona's.
No! That was, like Lucia woman, wasn't it? From I think because she was the one that asked to invite Sonia the year before and, like, Ramona had said no. And I just loved that. That made me genuinely laugh out loud. I had to actually stop, pause it, go back and take a photo of it because it broke.
It was stunning. Stunning move.
The editors have really stepped it up a notch since they had their break.
So the dancing begins. There's some serious like mum moves going on.
A lot of shuffling side to side.
Oh, they just love to like stand with their feet slightly apart and bop.
Yeah.
Me and my friend came up with this theory once that you can always just tell what generation a woman's from by how she dances.
Okay, so how do boomers dance?
It's a lot of very much that, like a wide-legged stance, and there's usually a lot of kind of hands in fists kind of like bopping around shoulder height, where they sort of just do this little shimmy side to side where nothing moves except their whole, like their shoulders upwards.
Okay, so that's boomers. Then we've got what, Gen X? Is it Gen X?
Which
way
did Gen X go?
No, Gen Z. The Spice Girls generation.
Spice Girls. And there's a lot of hands in the air for that one. A lot of you put your head down and you dance like that.
Okay, oh yeah, no, I can see that. Yeah. Maybe with like a little drink in hand, like sitting on the straw, like moving side to side. And then what about millennials? What do our generation dance like?
I don't know about millennials, really. I feel like it's either a very sort of stilted, like, I'm not dancing to this kind of a vibe.
Can I make a confession to you? I have a TikTok, which is on private, like just for me, not even for like follow me, where I just put it on that thing where it like multiplies you by three people.
Incredible.
And then I just pretend to have a dance troupe.
I love that. Do you know what it is? Genuinely, I love a good, completely like unself-conscious dance. It's like the best thing in the world.
I know, and like that's just what I have to do in my kitchen, and then I'll like set it to some fun music, watch it over, be like, nice, and then it just sits on my TikTok, and I'm like, if any of this ever leaks,
oh,
I'm
gonna
be horrified.
I think you sent me one once, and genuinely, it's the best thing I've ever seen. I'm obsessed with it.
I could be a viral TikTok star by now. I mean, to be fair, I'm sorry, I dance better than some of those fucking influencers, but it's just because they've got big boobs and they just like jiggle about and then everyone's like, wow, love that.
Oh, God.
So the girls start having a bit of like a sexy lap dancing moment.
I mean,
and initially Ramona's like, you have a run in your stocking. It doesn't look good. Which was like, okay, was it not really, not necessarily that, and more the exposed, like, genital area?
Yeah. I mean, also...
like rogue labia.
Yeah.
Forging its own path.
Genuinely, all she needs to do was come over and just be like, your dress is ridden up, like, let me just pull it down for her, and just fucking leave them to it, like... I don't know why her sister, like Ramona's sister, was so like, it looks like they're having sex over there. Like, calm down, you're not in church. Like, why are you getting so uppity about this? And the pair of them were just like, it's just so inappropriate. I can't believe they're doing this. And it's like, they're literally just having a dance together. Like, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, I didn't understand that at all. I don't even feel, I feel like even like Upper East Side, like Botoxed up women, once they get a few drinks in them, I don't think they'd be offended by this.
I mean, all of the women around them looked like they were just sort of laughing and having a good time. I don't think anybody was bothered except Ramona.
I think if they started making out, different story.
Absolutely.
Because I think there's a lot of like internalized homophobia, but I don't think that they would be that offended by this. And I was surprised that this was what this entire thing was all about. And then I reckon, I mean, I don't know if it's just the way that it was filmed, that after Ramona kicked off, Leah decided that she was going to egg on Sonia by being like, "Wah!" And yeah. then that's when Sonia gets on the table and starts smashing the mirror. And that, I'm like, okay, fair enough. Like, I would be pissed off.
Yeah, I could understand that. And I could have almost understood if that was what kicked this whole thing off. But I was so...
Yeah, but I think this was a symptom of it. I don't think this was the catalyst.
No, I agree.
Is what confused me.
Yeah, I was the same. Like, I genuinely thought it was going to be something, like, outrageous, like, totally out of hand, totally, like, over the top. And it's like... But it's, like, it's not even like it was, like, a bunch of trashy young women. It was, like, Dorinda and Luan and Elise.
Truly a sensual collection of people.
Like, it's not like these are, like, trashy women that have gatecrashed your party. Like, these are all, like, really, you know, reasonably respectable-ish women.
Do we think that part of it was because Ramona's got this kind of us-and-them mentality where it's, like, her housewife's friends and then her other friends? And do we think she felt shown up or humiliated by her housewife's friends in front of her other friends? And maybe if they were just in another random setting somewhere filming for the show, she wouldn't have minded.
I think she would have joined in. I think that they would have been doing this
at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if they'd have done this at the Berkshires, I think Ramona would have been like right in the middle of it. And I think it's because she's trying to pretend she's this like super snooty, like Upper East Side, like MAGA rally kind of like woman.
Yeah, it was odd.
It was just, the whole thing was just so fucking bizarre. But I did love that sort of final closing scene where it was just like Leah like, "Wah!" Sonia smashing the mirror and Leah screaming that Ramona's psychotic. And it was like a true representation of how rapidly that unraveled.
And then we get the preview where they're heading off to Mexico.
And like I say, I mean, Ramona clearly didn't follow through on her threat to quit the show. So she's definitely there having a good old time.
And rediscovers her sense of fun somewhere down the line, as she tends to.
I was not feeling Lou's fringe in this preview.
Oh, I didn't see that.
It wasn't a full fringe, but she definitely had something cut in and it just didn't suit her the way that her signature hair does.
Okay, interesting. I really liked her vibrator going off in her bag. No, because I never travel now with my electric toothbrush, because I was flying to Brussels once and I was putting my bag up in the overhead compartment.
Yeah.
And my electric toothbrush started going off and everyone could hear it and it was just vibrating. And I was like, "Guys, I'm really sorry, it's a toothbrush." And they were like, "Yeah, that's what they will say." And I had to like, I literally had to take out and like hold it up in front of the plane to prove a point. It's like, I'm never doing this again.
No, that's too much.
Truly upsetting.
But I did love that she copped to it straight away. She's like, "Oh yes, that's mine."
I mean, you know, why not? But take the batteries out. That's like lesson number one.
Rookie mistake. Such a rookie mistake.
I never do it because I always get randomly selected to have my bag searched.
Oh no.
Like, always.
Yeah. No, I'm always the same as well. So I literally have just never even chanced it. I couldn't cope with the humiliation, to be quite frank.
I'm also like never going to go on a holiday where I'm not gonna get laid. Like, this is not a concern. So you can follow Faith on Instagram at Faith_Elizabeth and check out her writing at faithrichardson.co.uk. Two H's in Faith on her Instagram handle, by the way, I forgot to say. You can follow me on Twitter at Louisa G. Rogers, and you can check out my work at louisarogers.net. You can also follow this podcast and do give us a 5-star review if you're enjoying listening, because it's going to help us in the charts and Lord knows we need it. At Bravo and the Brits.